This is the Anxiety Summit Season 2, and I'd like to welcome you to an interview on the very interesting and cutting-edge topic of genetic defects and how these can affect our anxiety levels and overall mood. I am your host, Trudy Scott. I'm a food mood expert, certified nutritionist, and author of the Anti-Anxiety Food Solution. And today's topic is anxiety, biochemical and genetic predispositions. And our guest expert is Dr. Benjamin Lynch. Dr. Lynch, welcome.
Thank you, Trudy.
Thanks very much for being here. I had the pleasure of attending a two-day training in October last year on the topic of methylation and clinical nutrigenomics, individualized medicine at its best, which was hosted by Bastia University and presented by Dr. Lynch, and it was jam-packed with cutting-edge information, research-rich. There was actually part two earlier this year, and I was unable to attend that one, but Dr. Lynch will share more about these and other ways that you can learn more about this topic because there's a lot to it. You can imagine 2 days, we covered a lot, and then another 2 days, there was a lot covered. So we're going to give you some highlights today and how this can tie back to anxiety. So I'm going to read your bio, and then we'll get started. Benjamin Lynch, MD, received his Cell and Molecular Biology, BS, from the University of Washington and his ND from Bastia University. His passion for identifying the cause of disease directed him towards nutrigenomics and methylation dysfunction. Currently, he researches, writes, and presents worldwide on the topic of MTHFR and methylation defects. You may learn more about Dr. Lynch and his work at mthfr.net. And Dr. Lynch is also the president and CEO of SeekingHealth.com, a company oriented towards disease prevention and health promotion. He lives in Bothell, Washington, with his wife, Nadia, and 3 boys, Tasman, Matthew, and Theodore. So I'm really thrilled to have you here, Dr. Lynch. And let's get right into what it is that you do exactly, and what is your focus?
Yeah, well, what I do is very broad, but basically what I do is I constantly am going after understanding the medical conundrums. So some patients are very easy to figure out. You just do the basic lifestyle foundational work, and away you go, and the patient comes back a few weeks later, and they say, "Thanks, doc, I'm all better." Then 20% of your patients, they come to you and you give them something as simple as CoQ10, and they come back and say, "God, doc, that floored me. I feel terrible." And you're all confused. So what I try to do is I try to identify the causes of these medical conundrums and help the 20% of the population that is suffering needlessly due to lack of applying what the researchers have already found. So what I do mostly on a day-to-day basis is read the literature that's already been published and connect the dots between paper to paper and then present it so doctors can apply those findings clinically. So that's kind of what I do in a nutshell. So I would call myself a medical researcher or a sleuth, per se, and try to make it all intertwined and connected so doctors can apply it.
Excellent. And I love that term, sleuth. Brilliant.
Yeah.
What I saw in the presentation, the two-day presentation that I attended, is there's so much research out there. So it's wonderful to have someone like you connecting all the dots and then disseminating it in terms that someone can actually implement. Very, really valuable.
Thank you. Yeah, it's needed. You know, the researchers are doing so much beautiful work, and then all the doctors, they don't have the time to read it. So someone's got to read it, and then somebody's got to have to digest it. So I wish they had more people doing what I do, but at the moment there's very few of them.
Well, we appreciate you for doing what you're doing. And you've got this website that's dedicated to a specific gene, and I read that in the bio, so it's mthfr.net. So let's talk about why is your website dedicated to this specific gene?
Well, I would say because it's common. I mean, MTHFR is a super common and prevalent gene. It's highly important, and I'll get to that in a second. And plus, people, when they go to Google, they don't go to Google looking for feeling better or optimizing their life. They go there because they're sick and they're looking for a solution to a problem. So MTHFR is a problem. It's a gene that it can be a problem. So MTHFR is basically, it's an abbreviation for a long word that basically transforms a form of folate into the body's most active form of folate. And that whole website is dedicated to that because certain portions of the population, the Chinese, the Hispanics, Italians, certain other parts of the Asian population have very, very high rates of MTHFR defects that are quite severe, which means it's only working at about a 30% capacity, which then means they can have significant health issues. So that's why there's a website dedicated to it.
Okay. So let's talk about how MTHFR is connected to anxiety.
Okay. Well, MTHFR, what it does is it helps produce the body's most active form of folate. So when you eat your uncooked leafy greens or your steamed leafy greens, you're getting ample amounts of methylfolate, which is great. But if you're eating your dry cereal, your energy bars, your energy drinks, or you're taking your prenatal vitamins and you think you're doing a great thing, and all these things have this synthetic folic acid, then that is a big problem. So because folic acid is absolutely synthetic and that folic acid has to be transformed into the most active form of folate, which is methylfolate, because that's what your body uses. It doesn't use folic acid. You think folic acid is actually useful for things like neural tube defects, but it's not. It actually has to be transformed. And so MTHFR contributes the last most important step for that to happen. So you say, how does that connect with anxiety? Well, methylfolate is super important because the end product of what MTHFR makes, because MTHFR, what it does, it's so central in everyone's biochemistry. If methylfolate, along with vitamin B12 and the protein that you eat, help make the body's most important compound, which is called, I shouldn't say most important, but one of the most important compounds called SAMe. So when you eat your protein and your methylfolate levels are adequate, then you are able to make your neurotransmitters. And if you are unable to make neurotransmitters or eliminate them, you're going to have symptoms of anxiety, depression, bipolar disorders, schizophrenic episodes, manic episodes, and so on. So it's very centralized. And it's very broad. It's not just anxiety, but since this is an anxiety summit, mm-hmm. We will focus on that in particular, and methylfolate, since it produces SAMe, helps produce your neurotransmission, and that is a big stepping stone.
Could you mention some of the other areas where that MTHFR defects can have an impact on, other than some of the mood problems you've just mentioned?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, great question. And MTHFR, that's why it's so important, because it's so broad. Think, well, how can one gene have such a major impact? And it's because, since it helps produce SAMe, that's why it has such an important impact. And say, okay, well, SAMe, I hear it's great for reducing pain, and it's also good for reducing symptoms of depression. But what else? Well, ATP, right? We all know ATP is the body's fuel source, correct? I mean, without ATP, we're done. We're dead. So ATP is the number one compound the body produces. And it also runs countless enzymes in the body. SAMe is in second place. It's that important. So that's why it's so broad. And so MTHFR can affect not only your mood and increase your anxiety or depression, but it also can increase your cardiovascular risk. You can have heart attacks, blood clots, strokes. All these things can be through MTHFR. Plus, you can have pregnancy-related conditions. Your child can be more susceptible to autism and Down syndrome because of MTHFR. You can also have more preeclampsia, infertility, spontaneous abortion, recurrent miscarriage, All these things are related to MTHFR defects. Neural tube defects, actually, the number one researched gene for neural tube defects is what? It's MTHFR. It's number one. So those are some of the other conditions. And then cancer. Cancer is a big player, because if you're not supporting your methylation and your CME production, then cancer is a really, really big risk factor. And so MTHFR is connected to numerous cancers, including thyroid, neck, stomach, and so on. So it's very broad. It's super important.
Yeah, and I'm really glad you mentioned the pregnancy and the spontaneous abortion and the neural tube defects. And earlier on, you mentioned the fact that we've got synthetic folic acid in prenatals, which is very problematic.
Yes, and here in America, you know, you're in California, I'm here in Seattle, and it's everywhere in America. And the processed food industry is growing by leaps and bounds. The convenience food industry is leaps and bounds. And people are getting more and more exposed to these things. They're more and more on the go, and thus the amount of folic acid they're consuming on a daily basis is way higher, I believe, than intended. Of course, some populations are still not getting enough food-based folate, but you know, supporting it with artificial folic acid, yes, it does have some benefit, but there's also some significant risk to it as well, and you know, that's what I get into in depth and try to educate, that folic acid is not the solution, but eating properly is, and taking the appropriate supplementation as needed is also important.
So can you just mention what form that we would need to look for in a supplement if we were taking a prenatal or a multivitamin?
Yeah, so if you're not getting ample leafy greens, or you can't handle leafy greens for various reasons, say they're not in season for you, they're not fresh, they're not organic, you know, you can't handle oxalates. There's numerous reasons why some people can't handle leafy greens. But so what you would turn to looking for on a bottle would be calcium folinate, and that is also equivalent to the term of folinic acid. And in the drug industry, they call it leucovorin. And so calcium folinate, folinic acid, leucovorin, that's all the same thing. And scientifically, the equivalent to that is 5-formyl tetrahydrofolate. So that is one. That's a very active form of folate. And the other one is methylfolate. Now, there's a bunch of terms for this as well. There's L5-MTHF. There's metafolin, there's quatrafolate, there's L5-methylfolate, and there's 5-methylfolate, L-methylfolate, and so on. So basically, you're just looking for the term methylfolate, and you have to make sure that it's labeled as 6S or L5-methylfolate on the bottle, because if it just says methylfolate on there and it's not labeled, it could be racemic. And that means that there's actually two types of methylfolate in there. There's the body's active form, and then there's the inactive form. And so if you're taking a supplement that just says methylfolate on there and you're getting 50% active, 50% inactive, that inactive form is going to bind to your receptors just as easily as the active forms, and it's going to block that cell's ability to function. So that's a very important point. And you typically see those in the higher dose methylfolate supplements, which I typically don't recommend anyway, because too much methylfolate can actually increase significant one's anxiety.
Okay, great. So you said L5 and 6S.
Yeah, L5 methylfolate or 6S.
Okay.
And they're basically the same thing. It's just some kind of little patent issue going on with the big guys out there.
Okay. Great. Thanks for that clarification. And I'd love you to just touch on what you just ended with, that too high can actually cause anxiety. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. So folates have a lot of glutamates attached to them. And these glutamates are what keeps the folate inside the cell. And glutamate, as we know, is an excitatory neurotransmitter. And so if you're taking a bunch of folic acid or some type of folate, you're getting quite a few bits of glutamate in there as well. And I'm trying to still figure out why this can increase anxiety. And there's multiple reasons for it. And some days I have a good explanation and other days I don't. So, but I would say that since folates, especially methylfolate, can increase SAMe, then you can be increasing your dopamine production, okay? And if you're increasing your dopamine production, that improves your ability to think. And it also reduces your addictive behavior because your addictions are typically driven by a lack of dopamine. So alcoholism, smoking, sugar intake, carbohydrate intake, all these things might center around low dopamine. So if you take enough methylfolate and other precursors to dopamine, such as L-tyrosine, then your body can start forming the dopamine levels. Now, the problem is if you're having dopamine is great, but the body will create neurotransmitters on an as-needed basis. That means it will create, if you see a line behind you, you say, oh, man, I got to get out of here. It will create a bunch of dopamine so you're alert, and it will also create a bunch of norepinephrine so you can get the heck out of there. And that is a spontaneous, immediate response that is needed for survival. But a lot of us are living in this, there's lions all over our desk chasing us to get more work done. And the problem with that is we're constantly on board, and these things deplete your levels of nutrients. So if that happens, then your ability to eliminate your norepinephrine or reduce your dopamine to a more quiet state will keep you anxious and alert for too long. And that's a big problem. And since we're going to be talking genetics here, MTHFR can predispose to anxiety because of the lack of formation of SAMe. Because if you don't have enough SAMe on board, then your dopamine and your norepinephrine levels stay higher longer. And that can be a problem. And if there's other genes that Trudy's going to bring up later as well, that if we don't catch these in certain patient populations, if you give them methylfolate, you can have them super irritable and irate. And even if they don't have these genetic problems, they could just be deficient in various nutrients, which you can predispose them to becoming irate. And I am, part of my ability to think and be such a, I hate the term workaholic, maybe it's true and I'm in denial here. But it is possibly because I have a lot of dopamine flooding around in my brain. And with that, you are also more prone to being aggressive or attacking or not responding, but rather reacting to people. And if you're aware of that in you, there might be a biochemical reason for that. Well, there typically is. So, and that's part of things that we're discussing today.
Okay, great. And this is really great because, you know, I hear someone say they're on really high doses of the active form of folate, the methylfolate, and they've noticed that their depression has gone away and their cravings have gone away, but they're much more anxious. So this would be that situation. It's raising the dopamine levels, but it's also causing higher levels of this norepinephrine, which is going to make you more anxious. So you've got to find that balance.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
So you mentioned that there's some of these other genes you want to talk about. Are we done with MTHFR, or are we going to talk about the two variations that we see commonly? And I know one of them's got a lot more research than the other. Do we want to go into that a little bit first?
I think we do. I think if people want to learn more about MTHFR and what it is, you just go to MTHFR.net, and you can read more about it. And There's a whole bunch of reasons for anxiety, and I don't want to pin everything on MTHFR. I want people to understand that there's multiple reasons for this. And in fact, Trudy's organizing a whole series of experts on this topic, so including her whole entire book. So I think it's important for us to move on and understand that there's a whole bunch of pathways in which these triggers for anxiety can increase. So yeah, let's do that.
Okay, so what I'll do is I will share some links to some of the articles on your wonderful site. I must say the website is amazing with all the content. And then another thing is the Facebook page is fantastic for discussions and hearing the latest information. So I'll make sure I share that as well so you can dig a little bit deeper. So are we going to talk about some of these other genes that may not be functioning properly?
Yeah, so dopamine. Okay, so if you have too little dopamine, you're not going to think and you're going to be tired and you're going to be craving addictions and that's going to be a problem. And you're going to be just not right. But if you get too much, like we talked about, you're going to be on edge and you're going to be more prone to anxiety. So the situation that you have here then is, okay, well, then how do we reduce the dopamine so we're not too low and getting our addictions back of smoking, drinking, and craving sugar? It is a balance. So what you have to do is you look at it and say, okay, what's the metabolism of dopamine? What actually makes dopamine go away? Well, if you look at the biochemical pathways, the things that help get rid of it, and I'm cheating right now because I'm looking at this poster I drew because you can never remember it all. And there's basically four major routes which help break down dopamine. And one gene that's very common in the population that's also kind of messed up is COMT. And COMT is a gene which does multiple things, but one of which is helps break down dopamine. The other one is helps break down estrogen. Now, if you think about the menstrual cycle and how that works, you get a big surge in estrogen, right, that triggers the menses. So you get this big surge of estrogen. If estrogen levels are high because of the estrogen of the basic menstrual cycle, then that COMT enzyme is working very hard in trying to break down that estrogen, and then it's going to be able to do less in terms of breaking down dopamine, right? Because we have two hands. If somebody comes up to you and they say, hey, carry these bags for me, will you? And they give you two bags, that's all you can carry. But then somebody else comes up to you and say, hey, man, can you carry something else for me? It's like, no, I can't. You're busy. So COMT gets busy with estrogens. And estrogens are pervasive in the environment, not just made metabolically by your body, especially if you're a woman, but we have obesity. Obesity, adipose cells are generating tons of estrogen, and harmful ones at that. So that's one issue. We have bisphenol A everywhere. That's a problem. And women every month are cycling if they're not in menopause. So they are struggling with that, trying to break down all that estrogen. So meanwhile, dopamine is sitting there hanging out while the COMT is dealing with all this extra estrogen in the system. So the first thing I say is to optimize your weight, easier said than done, but there's tons of tools for that. Avoid your plastics, because plastics are increasing the estrogens in your body and they mimic it. So that's causing your limited ability to get rid of your dopamine. And then the menstrual cycle, you want to be able to make sure your liver is functioning well so you can metabolize the estrogens. And then another one that helps process estrogens is good bacteria in your gut. So if you have bad bacteria in your gut, you're also not able to process estrogens. So the probiotics, certain probiotics are super prevalent for that, or super important for that too. Now another route for dopamine metabolism breakdown is sulfur. So if you are not eating adequate sulfur, i.e. eggs, the cauliflower, broccoli, cabbage, group, these types of foods, you can just go and, you know, Google and type in sulfur-based foods and get a whole bunch of them, artichokes, onions, garlic, asparagus, and so on. Then if you're not eating any of those, then your sulfur levels might be too low. The good thing is, though, a lot of us are eating protein, and there's a lot of sulfur in protein, quite a bit. But sulfur in veggies is also super important, so make sure you're getting adequate sulfur. Now, a key point with sulfur is some people, if they eat sulfur, they don't feel good. And there's multiple reasons for that. And I don't want to get into that too much. But what I could say is if you're not feeling good eating sulfur, you can just eliminate all sulfur foods for a few days. You can take up some thiamine and some vitamin B1. And you can also take molybdenum, and that's M-O-L-Y-B, D as in dog, E-N-U-M. It's a specific mineral that helps break down sulfites. So you're generating sulfites in your body and so on. So if you eat a little bit of sulfur, you can generate sulfites. So I'm saying that because I want you guys to be able to eat your sulfur so you can get down, get rid of that anxiety and process your dopamine, but do it in moderation. And then also another key thing with sulfur, this is something I just learned recently, which I want to share, is sulfur, if you're not eating it and you're not eating it for a long period of time, what happens is your number one antioxidant, glutathione, becomes destroyed to make your sulfur. So if you are not eating your sulfur-based foods, you are depleting your number one antioxidant out there to protect you, and that will generate the sulfur for your body. The problem is if you're low in glutathione, that can also cause anxiety. So having a weak antioxidant protective system can also increase anxiety. And so I'll just leave it at that because that's a tangent. And another one for anxiety is MAO-A. So that's a monoamine oxidase. So if you listen to the name of the gene, MAO, monoamine oxidase, it helps oxidize amines. So foods like tyramines, histamines, spermidines, all these are very, very high in certain foods, fish, leftovers, cheese, dairy products, and so on. And I can tell you how many people's anxiety will reduce if they stop eating these types of foods. So histamine-containing foods, a brilliant website out there is called thelowhistaminechef.com. I have no affiliation with this, but she does a fantastic job, and I highly recommend reading her website. She's fantastic, because histamine is very related to anxiety, and that's tied in because of the MAO enzyme. So reducing your histamine-containing foods
can
is a big one.
Can you repeat that website again, the low histamine?
TheLowHistamineChef.com. And she has some books out there and a bunch of videos. She and I have been trying to get an interview and podcast done for some time, and it's just not happening. But we'll get there at some point, because I recommend her all the time. Fantastic resource. So those are the main ones. Yeah, go ahead.
Let me go back to something that you said earlier about the sulfur. I just wanted to clarify something that you said there. So we want to be eating these sulfur-containing foods, as well as getting rid of plastics and lowering weight. And if you can't tolerate the sulfur-containing foods, you would do this elimination and take the B1 and the molybdenum, and then that would allow you to go back to eating sulfur. Is that what you're saying?
That's for the majority of people.
Okay.
And there are still some that can take a while. And then there's another big player that helps the sulfation pathway too, and that's calcium D-glucarate. So taking calcium D-glucarate, which is the glucuronidation pathway, is very supportive. Because what happens with sulfur is that there's a couple pathways to help eliminate sulfur. There's a sulfation pathway, and then there's the glucuronidation pathway. Now, you think the sulfation pathway would be the number one player, and it is. It is a big deal. But it's super specific to breaking down sulfur. But the problem is, since it's so specific, it also has a very low capacity. So imagine, again, walking through the grocery store and you're carrying a 2-carton of eggs, and then somebody tells you to carry a bunch of broccoli and cabbage on top of it, but you can't. That's the sulfation pathway. But you got a buddy behind you, or you got a grocery cart, and that grocery cart is the glucuronidation pathway. The grocery cart is huge. It's not necessarily specific to only sulfur-containing foods, but it does a lot of other things. But the beautiful thing about the glucuronidation pathway is the backup to the sulfation pathway. The problem is that glucuronidation pathway and the sulfation pathway get bombarded with things like food coloring. So food coloring can inhibit your sulfation pathway, which is a big deal. And there's a lot of other things, too, which I don't recall offhand, which block it. So taking calcium deglucarate is a good one. It's expensive, though, is the only problem. So I'll have to look up the other things that block the sulfation pathway. But now when I say eat your sulfur-containing foods, it's really important, too, Trudy, that we're clear in that you eat it sometimes. I'm not saying eat eggs and cabbage every meal and onions for dinner and your salad and so on. Moderate.
So, part of a healthy diet, yeah. And then I'm glad you mentioned the food coloring, because really we want to go back to basics. We want to get rid of all the junk, and we want to be eating real whole food, organic, because we don't want to get loaded up with all the pesticides. And I'm just so glad you mentioned, you know, so many other areas that we are covering in the summit. We're going to go into liver function and how to optimize that. We're going to talk a lot about the gut. We talked about BPA in one of the interviews that I did on environmental toxins. So it's tying together beautifully, and making all these changes in all these areas can have such a great impact. So I appreciate the fact that you've tied all of this together with some of the other interviews.
Yeah, excellent. And it's, you know, in Europe they have the warning label on food coloring, right? And here in the U.S., it's like we just turn our heads and ignore it. And we all know the Feingold diet and all these recommendations to avoid food coloring. And when you understand why these kids get ADHD symptoms, or they get crazy when they eat food coloring, well, it's inhibiting the sulfation pathway. Their dopamine is through the roof, and they can't sit still, right? And they get all aggressive in class and get sent to the principal's office. That's not cool.
No.
It's not their fault.
Shame. Poor kids. Wow. And it's just crazy how it's so much in our food supplies here. And they're making different products for European countries because they are up on it. They don't want this in their foods. And we need to learn this, and we need to get it out of our foods. And we need to go back to eating real whole food. So I'm glad food is such a big part of this discussion. Now, there's another gene that you were going to discuss, and that was the GAD. Did we finish with MAOA?
Yeah, and let me give you a brief story on MAO real quick. So, MAOA is a big one. And so my middle boy, Matthew, he had a constant chronic runny nose. I was like, what the heck? I dug through the house. I found some mold, got rid of the mold. Mold is gone, and he's a bit better, still there. Okay, so we don't drink cow milk, but we did have some cheese, and so he was four at the time, and I looked at him, and I said, Matthew, I know you love cheese, and I said, you know, we need to take the cheese away and see if it helps your nose, and he got all upset and was crying, and so I said, all right, I didn't phrase that very well. So I came back when he was calm and collected, and I said, you know what, Matthew, I think you get angry and really frustrated, and your nose runs all the time because of cheese. And he looks at me and goes, what? And I said, yeah. I said, how would you like to not be angry and have your runny nose go away? And he goes, yeah, yeah. I said, so let's try no cheese for 1 week and see if that helps. He goes, okay. And it was perfect. He went in the fridge and he chucked it in the garbage, and a week later came by, came and went, and his moods were more consistent. His runny nose was gone, it stopped. And so then the week came, I said, Matthew, I said, you know, look. He goes, what? I said, your nose is fine. And he goes, yeah. I said, it's not running anymore. He goes, yeah. I said, your moods have been pretty good too, huh? He goes, mm-hmm. I said, what about cheese? You want to try the cheese? He goes, oh, yeah, I want my cheese back. I said, but okay, but you might get mad and your nose come back. It gets runny again. He goes, yeah, yeah, I know. So, all right. And so I said, make sure how are you right now. How's your nose? And he showed me, and it was clear. And so he ate the cheese, and literally 5 minutes, that's all it took. His nose started running, and he was so angry and irritable. And after that episode, he was able to, at that young age, he was able to correlate associate those that episode, and he's not wanted to eat that cheese since. So that just shows you how significant food can be a player in this.
Wow, and you say he was 4 years old?
Yeah, he was very young. I mean,
that's
he could have
amazing.
Been 4 or 5, but yeah, it was, you know, you simplify it for kids, and he's come a long way now. But my whole family, we all have MTHFR, and Matthew and I are both, we only have about a 40% capacity for our MTHFR to do work, so we're definitely more able to be irate and irritable. Plus, we have this gene that we're going to discuss right now, which is GAD, and the GAD enzyme helps get rid of glutamate and turn that into our docile GABA neurotransmitter. And a lot of us know that GABA is useful for calming you down, right? And it's an over-the-counter supplement that is kind of controversial in terms of passing the blood-brain barrier, but regardless, GABA is what is the end product of this gene. And my whole family, man, it's red on the GAD sniff. We're loaded with GAD, so don't piss off the Lynch family. But the good thing is I see that in our genetics, and we're able to monitor that as much as we can. So the situation with GAD is if you're eating a lot of glutamate, such as MSG, right? So MSG is designed to stimulate taste buds. So it stimulates your brain. It fires it on all cylinders because glutamate's excitatory. So if you take a bite of Chinese food or those nachos, which are covered in MSG, you're like, oh, wow, this is so good. And it's so good because it's heightened your glutamate in your brain. It's artificially stimulating you. So the food industry are genius. So they've tricked your brain thinking, oh, these Doritos or whatever are so fantastic. So that is one issue. So you need to avoid foods that have MSG, or in soy and wheat, they're also very, very high in glutamates. And there's other ones too. And there's a very useful website out there called nutritiondata.self.com. And let me go to my Google here and make sure it's right. Yeah, it's nutritiondata.self.com. And you can go there and you can select. They have all the different things you can select. And if you select glutamate, you can find foods that are high in glutamate. And you can also go to Google too for that. But another main point with this is first you have to reduce your glutamate containing foods, which again are soy, wheat, and MSGs and so on. And then another factor is you have to look at what GAD needs in order to function. So what does this gene need in order to do work? So it needs magnesium and it needs vitamin B6. A lot of us are deficient in B6 and a lot of us are deficient in magnesium. Most of us are deficient in magnesium. And if you take a form of magnesium called magnesium glycinate, you're getting two benefits because the glycine is also an inhibitory neurotransmitter, which is very useful. Magnesium taurate is also useful as well to calm you down. So I prefer these forms over the other ones for calming people down, but magnesium glycinate is the preferred one for me. So making sure you take magnesium glycinate and vitamin B6 if you are anxious. And that reminds me, if we go back to dopamine, and you're taking tyrosine supplementation for your thyroid or what have you, being hyperthyroid is a big contributor to anxiety. And if you're taking too much tyrosine because it gives you energy, then that can be a problem. So watch your tyrosine levels. Why? Well, because they increase your dopamine. So that's the connection with that.
Excellent. Really interesting that you say your whole family has this. And the other thing is this issue with MSG, because it's in so many foods and so many people are not aware that it's in these foods. And I'm from South Africa, and there's actually a condiment called Aromat, and it is pure MSG, and it's labeled as such, and it's on the shelves, and everyone's consuming it. So I think you've really got to read labels and be aware that this is can be very obvious in some products, and it can be hidden in some other products.
Yeah, the best thing to do realistically is is to go in the stores and get the meat, the veggies, and the nuts and seeds, and you know the eggs, and some of the fruits, and you leave the whole middle sections alone. Don't even go down the middle aisles, and just go on the perimeter. That's where the food is.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so now are we going to talk about the testing? No, you were going to. So you were going to share some patient samples. Is there anyone else that you were going to share other than your son's story? And I'm really glad you shared that story because a lot of moms will say, "Oh my gosh, how am I going to make all these changes for my kids? How are they going to do it? And it's going to just be so overwhelming." But it's the fact that your son was 4 years old and he did this trial and he saw that connection is a testament to what kids can feel. You know, they will when they feel better, they're willing to make the changes. So, you know, if you're a mom out there listening and you're thinking, "Oh my gosh, how am I going to do some of this?" Kids will feel so much better, and then they will want to do this.
Yeah, for the most part. I mean, for the most part. And there's, you know, one of my other boys, my oldest, he's a bit harder to be compliant. And I don't know what the issue is with that. I'm not sure if it's a lack of dopamine. And I actually think it is a lack of dopamine in his situation. But it's harder to get him compliant. Plus, he's older and he's the firstborn. And firstborns, you're always unsure where to go next turn, right? Mm-hmm. So your youngest children, you're able to understand more what the next turns are because you've already been there. So, yeah, I mean, some kids are going to definitely be easier, but you want to empower the kid to make the decision. And if you do that, that's very helpful. And there's a great program out there called Love and Logic. And Love and Logic, I think it's loveandlogic.com. Let's see. Love and Logic. Yes, loveandlogic.com. And that's a very useful program for parents. I went through their training as a parent, and I found it very, very useful. Now, other cases that I've experimented with here, no, as a physician, sometimes you are. It's called medical practice, right? So sometimes you don't really know what to do. But I had a patient come in to the clinic, and he was doing very, very poorly. He was alternating between suicidal and super aggressive and anxious and wanting to beat up his wife. And he would, instead of beating up his wife, thankfully, he would throw plates and break dishes instead of attacking her. So he and his wife came in to see me, and they sat down. And so I was talking about these episodes, and he goes, "Yeah, you know, Doc, I'd be standing there on the sidewalk just totally depressed, and I'm so depressed because I'm always angry." So I was like, "Wow, that's an interesting combination." So I said, "Well, you're really swinging back and forth, huh?" And he goes, "Yeah, you know, I can be standing on the sidewalk and I want to step right in front of that dang bus and just do myself in. And then I'll come home or be at work and then I'll just be so mad." And I said, "Okay." And so we started discussing some things. And I always go to the diet first. And that's the first place I go. And I said, "What do you eat?" He goes, "I don't eat." And I was like, "Whatever. Come on. You eat something." He goes, "No, I don't eat." I said, I just sat there and I looked at him. I said, "You know, I'll sit here the whole patient visit until you tell me what you eat, because you eat something." And he was quiet for a bit. I just waited, and he goes, "All right, I eat sugar." He's like, "Okay, so you eat sugar. All right, fine. So you're eating a bunch of sugar. What else?" Said, "That's it." I said, "No." He goes, "Yeah, that's not serious. Fact. That's all I eat. I eat donuts. I drink sodas. I eat candy and I eat cakes. I eat ice cream. All I eat is sugar because it gives me that energy and I feel good. But then I crash and I need some more." I said, "Okay, well, I bet those crashes are causing the extreme fits of irritability, which is spiking your blood sugar to come back. So thus it's spiking your norepinephrine." So I went through this whole biochemical blast at him, and he just stared at me like deer in the headlights. And I said, "All I want you to do is to go away from here, no supplements, no meds, and sign this note that you're not going to do yourself in. No suicide attempts." He signed that, and he and his wife were completely on board to just change his diet, and he started eating every few hours, and he would eat protein, and he always had some nuts and seeds and some raisins in his on his body, whether it was in his pocket or his coat pocket or whatever. And they came back to see me in a few weeks, and I walked out to reception to get them, and we didn't get to the room. They both literally just gave me this huge hug and said thank you, and he was done. He was fine, absolutely fine.
Powerful.
So I think, and I'm almost in tears even right now thinking about that, and it was really cool. It was really cool seeing that. So Hippocrates was right, you know, let food be thy medicine, and it's not now. It's super hard to find food. It's really hard.
Yep, and so many people are eating such terrible diets, and if they can just do that, that is, you know, the starting point. And then if you change your diet and you try and balance your blood sugar and you get off the caffeine and you get off the gluten and you try, you know, some of these other things that you're going to hear about on the summit and you're still not getting resolution, that's when you want to go to the information that Dr. Lynch is talking about, because as you said at the beginning of the interview, there's this percentage of people that are just not getting the results, and then there might be some of these underlying factors that you need to deal with.
That's right. I mean, you're going to have thousands and thousands of people listening to these talks, and the majority of them, these simple lifestyle changes, that's going to be it. They're going to be done. Their anxiety is going to go away. But there's going to be, you know, 20% of them that these particular small changes that you and I are discussing right now, these can be the turning points for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's huge.
It really is. So now let's talk about testing. And you had said when you were talking about your family all having the GAD gene and all reds, some people may not be familiar what you mean by when you say all reds. So let's just talk about what that means, and then some of the testing that could be done. And if you were on season one of the Anxiety Summit, Colleen Walsh did talk about this in a little bit of detail, but I'd love to just go through it again in case there are people who may not be familiar with the testing.
Okay. Yeah, great point. And I want to say first that you are not the product of your genes. You are. We're here because of our genetics. That's true. But it's the environment that's around you and your perception of the environment that is so critically important. So you're born with the same set of genes as your twin, but your twin may go on through life and have a completely different end result. The causes of death are different. Their jobs are different. Their illnesses are different. Their moods are different, the desires for them are different, and so on. So they're genetically the same, but they're epigenetically different. So the genes, the genetics are the hardware of you. They're the computer, okay? But the software is the epigenetics. And so we can all have computers, and all of us, most of us do, but all of our computers have different stuff in them. So the genetics of the computer are basically the same, but the software that's running them is different. So I really want to throw a note of caution. If you go to a genetic testing and you get your results back and you do see these genetic mutations there, or these polymorphisms rather, is the proper term. I won't get into that, but so I just say mutation because it's easier for people to understand. It's not really a mutation. It's a polymorphism, but never mind. It's not the end of the world. In fact, it could not be even a problem for you. And a good thing for you to learn with that is Bruce Lipton. Watch his work, The New Biology, or The Biology of Belief. Bruce Lipton is very, very important. And there's an article on mtgfr.net. It's called MTGFR, So What? Because it's how you perceive the environment is important, how you interact in the environment, and how you take care of your body. So that said, moving on to genetic testing, big disclaimer that was, is 23andMe.com is what I use for genetic testing as a physician still. And I know if you go to their website, they say it's only a test for ancestry and all that. That's true. They do only test for ancestry, but they still provide you a lot of raw data for your genetics, which is beautiful. So just ignore that disclaimer on their website and order 23andMe test. And you can go to websites like geneticgenie.com, and that's Genie, and you can give a donation to them, because they are running that site that does take resources, so please give them a donation. And you can get some results through that test through them, and they show you how to get your data through 23andMe. Another website that I also like to use, that I also help contribute to, I don't have any financial ties in either of these, is mthfrsupport.com. And I prefer the mthfrsupport.com because it's more comprehensive than Genetic Genies. So, and that's my recommendation. So that's who I always recommend to go there. Because they have genes on there like GAD, GAD that we talked about. They have PEMT, which I think is really important for phosphatidylcholine. They have some vitamin A genes on there too. So a lot of these genes I talked with Sterling Hill of mthfrsupport to please put on her report. So she did. Now, when I was talking about red, and red means that it's not what's typical in the population. So we all have GAD genes in our system. We all of us do. Now, the majority of us have a certain type of a GAD gene. We have multiple different types of GAD genes. There's GAD1, there's GAD2, and so on. And so if you see a red on your report, that means it's different than the standard person, okay? So it's different. And we all have mutations. So if you see red on a lab test or a genetic test, yes, it could be a sign of some concern, but you do need to know that everybody's a mutant. I mean, that's how we evolve as a species and how everything evolves as a species. I mean, we're all mutants. I mean, so you gotta live with that. And it's kind of overwhelming for people to get that 23andMe test and see all those genes on 10 pieces of paper. That's like, oh my God, I'm really a mutant. Like, well, yeah. So if that's the case, then just get your MTHFR test. And that is a good starting point, but it's not really, because it's good to know these other genes too. If you're too afraid to look at it, have your doctor do it for you, but because it will defeat the purpose of your genetic testing. Genetic testing should be an empowering thing for you. You know, it's access to knowledge that can really be beneficial to you if it's utilized properly. And if you go to a doctor and you give them your results from Genetic Genie or MTHFR support because you've done the 23andMe genetic testing, and they look at that genetic test and they say, okay, well, you have MTHFR, you've got GAD, you've got CMT, you need to take this supplement, this supplement, this supplement, and then you're like, what? And so we'll take that. I got your genetics right here. You need to take these supplements. Red flag. Don't go back. Don't go back. There's no way that a doctor can look at your genetic results and prescribe supplementation based upon your genetics. It's not possible because these genes are turned on and off constantly based upon the situations you are in and the foods that you're eating and the chemicals you're exposed to and the bacteria you're exposed to and the inflammation and your immune system and your hormones, okay? So it's impossible to give treatment recommendations upon that, which is why I've been training doctors and health professionals all over the planet all the time. In fact, I'm flying out on Thursday to go to Vegas to teach a bunch of dentists about the harms of nitrous oxide, and then I'm going back somewhere else to talk about pregnancy-related conditions and in Japan. So, I mean, I'm all over the place. And so it's a privilege here being with Trudy and discussing this with you guys, because it's a great summit that she's providing, because we're all anxious to some degree.
Great, and thank you for giving that clarification, because two things. One is a lot of people look at that test and they just think, oh my gosh, you know, it's the end of the world, and they don't need to. And then the other is this, you know, taking all these supplements. So I know at the end of the interview we're going to talk about what your recommendations are for reducing anxiety, but I want to just go into what you said, that you're educating doctors, and there are people, you know, there's going to be other health practitioners on the summit, and maybe consumers who want to learn more about this. So where do they go to learn more about this? Because as I said at the beginning, there's so much more than what we can cover today.
There is, and it's a lifelong thing. We're always trying to optimize our life, and we're always trying to improve our education to some degree, and our kids and our grandkids. So mthfr.net is a good place to start. There's a lot of free videos and free information on there, and the newsletter I send out periodically as well. Facebook, as Trudy said, I'm pretty prolific in a good way of comments. So if I'm sitting there researching something and I think, like, wow, that's really important, people need to know this right now, I'll share it on Facebook. And some people might be over their heads, but some people will get it. And it could be very, very useful for them. So Facebook is Dr. Benjamin Lynch, I believe. And it's a great, great source as well. MDGBAR.net, too. If you just click the Facebook thing, it will take you there. And then SeekingHealth.org. That's Seeking Health Educational Institute. And this is a purely educational resource. If you go to the Learning Center there, there's a lot of podcasts. There's past recordings. There's going to be other summits that I've done. Where I've given other interviews as well, posted there. And then there's some video courses from past conferences, which were geared towards physicians. But the beautiful thing is they're broken down into series of videos, so you can start and stop all you want. And there's also, it's reduced prices for laypersons, so they can become educated. And for physicians, tell your doctors about it, too, because they can get their continuing education credits, which we need as physicians every year, to make sure we're continually learning. And doctors can fulfill those by getting these courses and increasing their education in this area, which is super complex. And doctors that are just are really enjoying the course. So if you email them, the link to the course is there. If you go to seekinghealth.org, there's a link there. It's called Products. And then you can click down to online courses. And there's cancer conferences there. There's the methylation conference, which Trudy was there, where I got to meet her, and so on. So that's a great way to go.
Excellent. Great. And I'll make sure to share the links to these on the blog that's going to go with this interview. And then also we've got this free gift that you very generously have given to the listeners, and that is this really fabulous folate video presentation along with the pathway planner. And I've watched it, and it's absolutely fabulous, very content rich, and it's an 80-minute video presentation on methylation defects and methylation. So really, really great. Anything you want to add about that?
Yeah, I forgot about that. Thanks for that. SeekingHealth.org/gift, G-I-F-T. And so just type in SeekingHealth.org/gift, and that you will be taken to a page where you will see information about this 80-so-minute video that's very, very important to understand the difference between folic acid and folate and how everything works and what MTHFR is. At the same time, you get this diagram of what's going on genetically and biochemically, and which we were discussing today, so you don't get lost. So that's a very great place to go. And also, please share that with your doctor as well. I mean, share that with as many people as you want. I have no problem with that.
Great. You're very generous with all your information and all your resources. So thank you for doing that. And thanks for everything that you're doing in this field, because, as you said at the beginning, it's important, and we need to be disseminating all this research and making it digestible for everyone. So to wrap up, Dr. Lynch, what are your three top recommendations to reduce anxiety?
Oh, it's tough to limit to three, but I know we have to. Protein. If you're not eating adequate protein, you find yourself waking up in the morning and skipping breakfast, what that's going to do, it's going to spike your stress hormones, stress neurotransmitters, and it will take you a while to calm down. So if you wake up in the morning and you have a nice protein smoothie or some eggs or nuts and seeds or what have you, I think nuts and seeds are a little bit too hard on the system for breakfast. I love smoothies personally. Eggs can be good as well. Quiches or pancakes, bacon and eggs, whatever you want to do, I think is a great way to start your day. And if you eat adequate amounts of protein first thing in the morning, that will sustain your neurotransmitters for a longer period of time, so you're more even keel throughout the day. If you wake up in the morning and your breakfast is coffee and a donut, you're spiking the stress neurotransmitters big time, and you're going to be anxious. And so you can have your coffee if you like, but I'd rather you focus with your protein. So that protein for breakfast and throughout the day, if you start noticing some hunger, then I would like you to get some protein in you. If you wait too long to eat, you're going to gravitate towards sugar. Why is that? Because if you wait too long, your body is starving. Your brain is starving, and the number one fuel for your brain is glucose. So if you're waiting too long to eat, you're going to gravitate towards the glucose to give your brain what it needs, and it's going to be screaming, glucose, give me some glucose, dang it. But if you feed it before you get there, it can work with the protein, and it can have a longer fuel source over time. And there's paper after paper, and that's in the Methylation Part 2 conference where I talk a lot about neurotransmission, and I provide study after study after study of why you need to eat protein consistently to maintain that, and it's proven. So protein for breakfast is great. Another one would be to surround yourself with great people and engage in things which you love. If you're going to work just to make money, that's a problem. If you're around the wrong people just to fit in or, you know, do things because you think it makes you look cool, so what if you look cool or not? You got to be happy. So you got to make sure you're happy, and I would say that's point two. So happiness requires laughter, requires love from your friends and your family, and it requires a passion for what you do at work. And if you are driving to work in an hour and a half each way, move. If you love your job, move. If you can't do that, ask to see if you can telecommute a few times a week. I don't see why you couldn't. I mean, I own a company, and I all my employees are, most of them are local, but they also, some of them telecommute, and some of them are in different parts of the world. So you do what you can for that. And the third one would be to, I would say, exercise in some way, whether it's some type of sporting activity, whether it's a treadmill desk, whether it's walking with your dog or your husband or your cat or your friends, doesn't matter. I used to walk with a goat downtown Sun River, and that I got cross-eyed looks from even doing that. So walk whatever you want to walk, but get out and exercise, because exercise is oxygenation. You need oxygenation for your brain, and breathing is super important, because if you're not breathing properly, you're going to get oxidative stress, and oxidative stress, as we talked about, can also lead to anxiety. So in short, protein, love, laughter, and breathing. And hydration. I'm going to throw in a fourth, making sure you're drinking purified water and not expensive canned fancy drinks. So that'll be the wrap up for the four.
Excellent. And I love that we've taken it back to basics. You know, we've talked about all of this methylation and polymorphisms and everything else, but taking it back to basics is really important. And I love how you always say, you control your genetics. They do not control you. And implementing some of these things that you've talked about, I would say no coffee if you're anxious, but that's just me and my clients. I'm definitely a big fan of the protein and everything else that you've mentioned. And I love the idea of walking with a goat. That's going to give me the exercise and the laughter, I'm sure.
Yeah, and right. You know, a lot of us, we gravitate towards coffee for what reason, right? We're tired and we can't think.
Yeah.
Right? So you wake up in the morning, you fasted for 8 hours or so if you're sleeping properly. And so you wake up in the morning after fasting, you're protein deficient, and you might be adrenally exhausted, so you're not able to stimulate the breakdown of your stored sugar in your muscles or elsewhere. So that can be a problem. And I've recently come up with taking NADH in the morning. And NADH combined with CoQ10, because if you just take NADH, it's not good enough. You need CoQ10 to carry those electrons that NADH creates. So NADH and CoQ10 in the morning can be just a fantastic way to get out of the bed in the morning. I have a bottle right by my bed, and I haven't needed it in the last week. I think I've broken that barrier. I am not a morning person at all. But I put one of those in my mouth, and within minutes, I'm alert. And so that would be a great way for people who are addicted to coffee and donuts to get off and to supplement with something like that, because it's immediate. It's absolutely immediate, and you don't crash from it.
Interesting. I'm not familiar with that. I'll have to look into it. What would you say to tyrosine for doing the same?
Tyrosine can be good. But tyrosine can be also too stimulating.
That's it.
So food is fuel. So we eat food, and then food goes through all this breakdown reductive process to make NADH. So you eat food to make energy, and that NADH then goes into your mitochondria to generate ATP. So if you can generate ATP right away in the morning, bang, you're good. If you take dopamine, if you take tyrosine in the morning, the only thing you're generating is dopamine and thyroid hormone.
Okay.
And both of those things can be too overstimulating for people. And then you can you're speeding up the mitochondria, speeding up because of the thyroid production, and you're speeding up the dopamine. And it does definitely wakes you up. But at the same time, it doesn't, if that's what they take, it could lead to too much anxiety for some people. In fact, I'm making a 50 milligram lozenge of tyrosine right now so people can graduate slowly and spit out the lozenge if they feel good. Because right now, if you swallow a tyrosine pill, you're done, right? You're locked. So if you can suck on some tyrosine and then spit it out when you feel that you have enough energy, that's it's kind of rude, but
no,
do it lightly.
Yeah, that sounds great. Because I like to get someone calmed down first before we give them energy. And if you give them tyrosine right away, that can be, as you say, it can cause too much stimulation and can actually cause anxiety. So we don't want to do that.
That's right. And so the NADH with CoQ10, I think is I really want this to get out there because I think a lot of people who are addicted to coffee in the morning or even cigarettes, even worse, I think that it could really help resolve these things, not because of addictions, because it has nothing to do with dopamine levels, but it has everything to do with forming your ATP, and that's what you need to get kickstarted in the morning.
Interesting. Well, very good. And then one quick follow-up question on the protein comment. Are you in favor of animal protein as a better source than vegetable sources of protein, plant sources of protein?
Well, the vegetarian, vegan lifestyle, I mean, I understand and I completely respect the desire for that. They are typically an incomplete protein because they don't complete, they can be incomplete. So if animal proteins are typically pretty darn complete, especially eggs. Eggs are the perfect protein. So I'm not a fan of soy, and most soy is genetically modified. If you want to do vegetarian sources of protein, you can do combinations like rice and pea. There's a lot of combination products like that, but you have to make sure that the rice is not loaded with a bunch of arsenic, which is a problem. So that is something to keep in mind because arsenic can mess up your methylation, which then can increase your anxiety. You can, as long as you're eating protein, I'm good. I am more pro animal protein, absolutely, than I am vegetarian and vegan lifestyles. These can be very, very depleting on the person for various reasons, and I get into that biochemically in various other talks. That doesn't mean you can go out and just pig out on a bunch of animal-based proteins because those can be very pro-inflammatory, especially if they're not grass-fed or free-range chickens or what have you because they're eating all those harmful grains, which are inflammatory. So grass-fed beef, try to find a local rancher near you and get grass-fed beef and grass-fed chickens and healthy eggs this way instead of store-bought. And you save a lot of money and you support the local rancher as well.
Beautiful. Thank you for that. And thanks for that clarification. And I agree. We can become very depleted and have a lot of issues. And I get the whole, being a vegetarian, I was myself and it didn't work for me. And you were. Yeah, a lot of us have been through that and figured out that it's not the best thing for us. So, this has been absolutely fantastic, Dr. Lynch. Any final words of wisdom before we end, and I'm sorry we went a little over the time here, but it was so good.
Yeah, no, I think just keep learning and don't, at the same time, don't overwhelm yourself with the education, the foundation, the basics. You know what you have to do, right? I mean, you know you got to be happy. You know what you should be drinking, and you know what you should be eating. It is a struggle to do these three things nowadays. But make a concerted effort and do the basics first, and that you'll come a long way, And another thing is, if you're not happy with your doctor, fire them. Fire them. Get a new one. And ask your friends who they use and if they're happy. And that's as a doctor saying that, it keeps me in line too.
Yes, good. Well, thanks so much, Dr. Lynch. This has been absolutely fantastic, action-packed and jam-packed with information, as I would have expected. Thanks so much for your time and for all the work that you're doing, reading all the research and disseminating it. And thank you, everyone, for joining us for an amazing interview on the Anxiety Summit. This is Trudy Scott signing off. I look forward to hearing you on another interview.